Sunday was a fun day I spent with you.
All right. This is episode 78 of AndrewCast. Welcome back once again, and we hope that you enjoyed people eating fruit. But right now, I got with me Jordan Spector, the one and only, the greatest. Is that cool if I call you that, Spector? You know what I'm saying?
You can call me whatever you want.
Hey, man.
It's my first or last name.
All right, man. That's really kind of you. Just pull the mic a little bit closer to you if you can. I probably put it too far away. But it's great to have you here, man. I met you, obviously, we were just talking about it briefly, through Graham, who was previously on this podcast. He was the lifestyle coach. And then James, who's the photographer. And, you know, they run together in Pillars of Growth, and they both moved to L.A., so it's been cool keeping tabs on them. But, yeah, when I went to your show, man, I was really, really impressed. I know you do a lot of, essentially, it's Philadelphia athlete art. Have you been, like, a Philadelphia sports fan your whole life? How has that worked?
Yeah, for the most part, most of my life, ever since I was a sports fan. But I'd say my number one sport is definitely football.
Yeah.
So I've been an Eagles fan the longest, and then that led to me becoming a fan of other teams. But football has always been my number one sport, and if you look through my work, you'll see that majority of it is football.
Yeah.
But I've grown as a fan with all the other teams as well.
Yeah, there's a lot of intensity in your artwork. Like, mm-hmm. a lot of the poses that you have athletes doing, they're very much akin to, like, superhero poses or poses that Dragon Ball Z characters do. And I think that football has the most of that kind of that beast mode, you know? Mm. And do you specifically like drawing poses like that, where there's a lot of musculature and intense facial expressions? Is that your go-to? That's more fun, huh?
Yeah, that is the most exciting for me, actually. Yeah. So I purposely... whether it's a personal project or a commission job, I always try to push people to do a more emotional, more passionate, more intense image or scene. 'Cause for some reason, I've just always been drawn to that energy. And kind of like the slogan for my company and my brand is art with energy. And I really love when people relate to that without me even having to say anything. So I'm glad you brought that up, 'cause that's really what I try to encompass in all my work.
Yeah.
Is energy.
I was honestly looking through your Instagram and your body of work, and one of your pieces that stood out to me, there was a lot of really standout pieces, but I'm going to mention two in particular. The cam one you did, dude, that one was like, it looks like a photo. Mm-hmm. Like, that is super, super close. And I would say, I was showing your art to my parents earlier to explain, like, who was coming over to do an episode, and my dad asked, he said, "So does he, like, edit photos?" I was like, "No, man, he paints these." And he's like, "Wow, yeah, man, that's fantastic." Do you think after all these years of painting that the measure of a good artist is somebody that can replicate something with 100% accuracy, or is there more to it than that? Like, what's your opinion on it? Because that cam piece is, when I look at the way that the light is hitting his skin, I was like, this is like almost photo accurate, you know? That,
talking about Cam Chancellor?
Yeah. That piece is amazing.
Yeah, and I kind of redid that one. It was kind of like my revamped version of it. I did an illustration of that years ago. It was like one of my first pieces when I really started getting back into art.
And when was that?
Around 2015.
Okay.
And we'll probably get into that at some point, like how I got back into it.
Yeah.
But yeah, recently I had the opportunity to connect with Cam on Instagram, and it was kind of a thing where over the past year or two, like, I'll post something and I'll tag him, and he'll see it now and then, and he'll like repost him on his story, or he'll comment back, which I've always appreciated. He's always just been very engaging.
Yeah.
And when someone's like that, like, you know, I always try to build a relationship. So I just straight up said to him, hey, you know, would you like me to make one for you? So, and he was about it. I was about it.
That's
so
awesome.
I created a massive new revamped Cam Chancellor, the Enforcer painting for him.
Yeah, man, it's awesome. And yeah, it seems like, judging from your Instagram, you have the opportunity to interact with a lot of athletes and people from the sports community. What kind of stuff do they say about your art? Like, what's one of the compliments that stayed with you from these people, you know? Because they're probably super excited to see themselves painted and stuff like that.
Yeah, I mean, I always love to see the reaction, or just like, not that they're like, oh, this is great. Like, I like to see a genuine reaction, like, wow, like, this is dope, or that, you know.
Yeah.
And some guys, like, sometimes I'll expect a reaction and not get it, but it's bad to do that, to expect something. But other times it'll be way more than what I thought, you know what I mean? To the point, I really like when anybody I do work for, especially an athlete, like, refers to me as, like, they're like, oh, like, you're the GOAT, you know what I mean?
That's awesome.
You're the great. I don't think I am, but I do love my style, and I stick to my style. So for them to feel that way and think that way means a lot to me. So I've gotten good compliments like that.
The number one question is probably always like, how long did this take?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That is like, people will stare and stare and then ask that question.
Right.
So
they look
times
at the painting, then they look at you, and they look back at the painting, and they're like, how long did that take?
Yeah. Yeah. So people ask that a lot.
Yeah. So I know around the Super Bowl win for the Eagles, that time period, that's probably when you did the banner on the highway, right? No?
No, that was pretty long after. It was
okay
right before the 2019 season.
Okay.
Wait. Am I mixing up my dates here? Not this past season, the season before that.
Gotcha.
Yeah, season before this last one. After the Super Bowl, the season after the Super Bowl, this like crazy opportunity just kind of came out of nowhere, and it became a huge deal, as you saw by looking through some of those posts and stuff. So yeah, that happened. That went up in August of the year, of the same year that the Eagles won the Super Bowl. And you want to talk about how that happened?
Well, I was going to say, for people who don't know, in the center of this billboard is Jason Kelce, obviously, and then the Mummers costume, because he gave that Super Bowl win speech at the parade. But what's really cool is, obviously, a big idea in the speech was hungry dogs, and so you drew him as a dog. But it's really, really detailed. And I wanted to ask, that 52-hour piece, is that the longest that you have ever spent on a painting, do you think?
No.
No?
Mm-mm.
Do you remember what the longest is?
It was up there, but I'm trying to think. I feel like I had to have put in more time than that.
Really?
On other stuff. It's one of those things where, like, I'd have to look through and be like, oh, yeah, all right, that one took. Yeah, so I don't know, but I think I definitely beat that.
Huh.
There's something I'm working on right now that is in the baby stages that is going to take me at least 200 to 300 hours.
Really?
And it's a very big project that I'm excited about, but that'll be my biggest challenge by far, and also the most time consuming.
That's awesome, man. I can't even imagine spending that much time on like one piece.
Yeah. I can't either.
Right.
So it'll be fun.
Well, you have to break it up incrementally. I mean, I think anybody watching or looking at art understands that. So before we get into your history with art and why you did it, how you started, all that classic stuff, walk us through, if you can, if you wish to, your routine. Because you spend all this time sitting down and looking at something, right? Really focusing on it for hours. What are you listening to? Do you have music on? Do you have the TV on? Do you have games on? Are you watching sports games while you draw athletes? Like, what is the strategy there?
No, I mean, sometimes I'll get a little relaxed and I'll have TV on. But when I'm really in the zone And for some reason, it's always at nighttime, like late at night when I'm just up late, just like super focused. Mm-hmm. That's when I'm at my best.
Yeah.
It's almost hard sometimes for me to have my best thoughts and moments during the day. I don't know why, but it all comes to me at nighttime a lot, mm-hmm. especially when I'm like grinding to get something done and I'm just like on overdrive mode. And like, that's when things are just clicking and going.
Yeah.
Because I'll design stuff a lot of the time before I do it, especially now. Like, I like to present a very professional design to clients so they know pretty much exactly what it's going to look like.
Mm-hmm.
And I always try to explain to people, it's going to look a lot better than this, but this is the placement of things. Right. You know? But then as I'm in the moment, things just come to me that I add to the artwork usually.
Mm-hmm.
So back to your question. Music ranges a lot.
Okay.
But usually it's like hip hop or just something that has a lot of energy to it.
Really?
Yeah, something that just has a good flow to it.
Mm-hmm.
But it changes a lot. Sometimes I listen to podcasts too, but mm-hmm. then I lose track of what they're saying and then I feel like I'm wasting my time.
So you're the kind of person that when you paint, you actually tune stuff out.
Yes.
So like somebody could be talking to you and you'd be like, what did you say? Like you?
No, I've had conversations like mid painting before mm-hmm. or mid some kind of project.
Yeah.
And usually I can focus, but sometimes if it's like very informational and I'm really trying to pull as much information as I can from a podcast, it doesn't always click. So I have to listen to it a couple times.
Okay.
To really just, because if I'm not working on something, and I'm purposefully taking time to listen to something, I'm like taking notes down. Like I gotcha. Depending on what it is, I really like value a good podcast that has a lot of information.
So you mean like
that helps me? Yeah. So
yeah, that's cool, man. Because I know everybody has their thing that they do. You know, some people have to have like food with them. You know, some people have to have like a certain movie or something on. One of my favorite comic book artists, Akira Toriyama, when he was drawing Dragon Ball, he had to have a old Jackie Chan Kung Fu movies on. That was like his inspiration as he drew the comics. So everyone's got their thing. And with the nighttime thing, man, I've heard many people come on, actually people on this podcast say the exact same thing. And my theory on that has always been when it's nighttime, there's an elimination of distraction, meaning that you know you can't walk out of your apartment and go to like the pizza place is closed, you know? Not a lot of people are going to be calling you or texting you because they're all asleep, right? And so you have this elimination of distraction that makes you think that you're kind of in this like zone of solitude. No one's going to bother you. You don't have to get up and do anything. You don't have to worry about any calls. And you can just sink all your time into something. And also, I don't know, maybe it's just me, maybe it's an ego thing, but when you feel like the rest of the world is asleep and you're working, you work harder. I don't know what it is.
I was just thinking that sometimes that thought comes into your head like, oh, I'm working right now.
Right.
Everybody's sleeping, but I'm putting in that extra work because mm-hmm. I wanna get this done or I wanna release it. You know, yeah, I totally get that.
Yeah.
That's cool. I think that definitely adds to it as well.
Right. So to rewind a little bit, drawing your whole life, or was there a point in your life when you said, time to teach me how to draw? What happened?
Drawing my whole life.
Yeah.
Ever since I was a kid. I'm sure my parents would have a better beginning story than I have, because I just can't remember that far back. But at some point, I just started doodling, drawing. I've drawn my entire life, and I have illustrations that I've wanted to put out there from when I was a kid that are like pretty good. From my age, you look back like, wow, like I really did that when I was 10, you know, stuff like that. And certain like bigger projects, my dad would help me. My dad's a very good artist as well.
Really?
I definitely get that talent from him.
Okay.
So I owe a lot of credit to him. But yeah, I've always drawn stuff in my life that at that time I was interested in. Fire trucks, and then when I was a real geek, like Yu-Gi-Oh and Pokemon and Star Wars, all kinds of stuff.
Cool. So did you get in trouble a lot for drawing in class?
I don't think so.
No?
I think I got away with it.
Dang.
But there's plenty of times when like, even if I'm on the phone sometimes, I'll like have something in front of me and I'll just like end up doodling something and not even know that I'm doing it.
Right.
And look at it after and be like, what the heck is that? You know? And sometimes it'll look really cool. It's just like shapes and like whatever, just blah.
I feel like the ability to draw is akin to dreaming, because you can kind of do it without thinking about it too much, where you just let off like what's in your subconscious, whether it's a fish or it's a clock made out of diamonds. You know, you have something in your brain that just your hand can bring out. And it's just all the hand eye that you've developed just from drawing over time. So you're drawing all throughout high school. And then did you go to college? Were you traditionally trained, excuse me, or are you just self-taught?
Up until the end of high school, I'd always taken art class, whatever classes they offered. I was always in them. I think my senior year of high school is when I stopped. I could have taken like AP art, which in high school is like the highest art class you could take. And I actually didn't do that because I was more like taking it super serious, prepping to go to art school. And for me, I wasn't thinking art school at all. And at that time, I was so focused on football. Like, that was, like, my life.
Right.
And
so you're a full-time athlete, full-time artist at this point.
Yeah, well, I mean, I don't play football anymore, but...
No, no, I'd say at this point in the story.
Right? Yeah, yeah, but not even... I was more focused on football. I wasn't as focused on artwork.
So the art wasn't as big of...
No, it wasn't as big. And I look back, and sometimes I wish I had put more time into it, but everything happens for a reason. But, yeah, back then... It was not a priority compared to football.
Yeah.
Like, that was, like, my life, you know.
Well, yeah, for sure. I mean, it still shows in your work today your passion for that sport. I mean, that's the first thing you said at the beginning of this episode, is that you, above all else, love football.
So yeah.
That makes sense.
For sure. So, I'm trying to think, what else did you ask?
Well, I was just asking how you got to... I guess the state of artist that you're at today, you didn't go to art school for this.
Yes. Yeah. so I went to college without thinking I was going to play football, really thinking, oh, let me focus on academics. And I made the decision in high school that I felt like I really wanted to do like physical therapy, rehab type stuff. Because when I played football, I had that same help, which really like... you know, help save my football career and really help like pick me up from a dark area, you know, when you get hurt, you know, in general, it's just depressing. But having that in my life, like inspired me to want to kind of do the same thing to help people in that regard. So that's what I went to school for. It was technically called kinesiology in undergrad college. And then, physical therapy school, which I went to school for physical therapy as well. So I have my doctorate in physical therapy.
Wow, man.
Yeah.
That's impressive. I'm really impressed.
Yeah. And I finished school last year.
Wow.
In May.
Congrats, man.
So I have grown the art business, the brand, whatever you want to call it, since my last year in undergrad until now. And and half the second half of last year till now is pretty much the first time ever that I've put in been able to put in a full effort to the art. Even though it's always been a full effort, it's always been the amount of time I've put into it is full time. Now it's kind of like really taking another step.
Yeah,
and being able to have an ability to.
How does that feel, man? It must feel like amazing.
It feels amazing, and the amount of pressure that I used to feel is kind of gone. Cool. Just trying to balance that in school. And I don't know, I never gave up on either. I just kept pushing through.
Right.
There's many times where I felt like dropping out of school just because certain times of the year you do really well and then you're like, oh, like I don't need school. And then it drops off again, you know?
Yeah.
And then it kind of just goes back and forth. And I just, I never pulled the trigger to drop out. I wanted to finish and that's what I did.
Dude, I'm impressed, man. You got your doctorate. I mean,
yeah.
I think the key phrase there is that you said you're passionate about both. I think it would be different if you weren't passionate about one. Then, yeah, maybe you should drop it, right?
Yeah.
Because life's short. You should only really do what your passion is. But, dude, you did both and you pulled through. Like, that's really cool, man.
Yeah.
What do you think? There's definitely a big stigma, though, about art school and people going to school for art. And I feel like young artists, they're very pressured by their parents and peers, like, hey, man, you shouldn't go to school, you know, for art because it's a bogus degree or you're not going to get a job. Do you have, like, any view on that? And maybe you don't have any opinion on that at all, you know?
I do have an opinion, but I can only speak from one side of it.
Right. No, I'm not trying to pigeonhole you or anything. I'm just
Since
curious.
I never went to art school, I can't say if that would have changed my art career even more, or taken me on a different direction or path. But I wouldn't say it's a waste. But I also would say that it might not be necessary. And like for college, like you would look at my undergrad college, and like even for physical therapy school, half the stuff, half the classes you take, like it's a bunch of crap, you know, it's a bunch of, you don't need that. But the experiences you have, the people you meet, that's really what I think college is for, essentially, you know. There's so many connections I made throughout that time in my life that somehow that is helped my career, helped where I'm at now. So I think it's all kind of part of the process. So I don't think it's necessary. I don't think it hurts. But when money's a factor, when time's a factor, that's when you really got to think, is it necessary? Is it not?
Take that into account.
I mean, and like for me, like I'm self-taught, but I just naturally have that talent, you know, from my father. And my father's, in my opinion, a better, well-rounded artist than I am. He can sculpt. He can do all kinds. He went to art school.
Okay.
And he learned a lot of different crafts when he did that. and even my brother is like a really good photographer, stuff like that. So I think if you have it, you have it. You know? So.
I didn't mean to interrupt you there, but I definitely agree with you, man. I feel college is what you make it when it comes to exploring your passion, right? If you only stay in the classes and do only what the classes require of you, you're going to get only the classroom results, which are good grades, but it's not really applicable in the real world, right?
Mm-hmm.
If you go to school and you're making connections, you're going out of your way to make connections and try and secure a job in the future, and you're doing extracurricular stuff that has to do with your passion, right? So if you work in TV, you're working at the school television station, doing shows for them, you know, as opposed to just staying in class and getting what the class material is, you're doing stuff outside of the classes. I feel like that's the step that a lot of people miss. You know, they think that just by going to some school and doing what the school says that they're going to get great results. But it's really the people like you who are thinking in an entrepreneurial sense, like, all right, what am I doing outside of my class? I'm building a business along with getting my degree. So now, not only do you have two sources of income, but you have two sources of income from things that you love. Like, that's crazy. Like, you just met with a client. What time is it? 8 o'clock. And you brought over just like a bunch of prints and spread out on the table. There's not a lot of people that can say that they do that, you know?
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of people that are like, oh, I met with a client, but it was at 8 a.m. at Dunkin' Donuts, and I had a file full of papers and spreadsheets. And no, man, you just went over someone's house, and you had a bunch of pictures from, I'm guessing the Eagles and maybe the Flyers, and some guy was like, this is awesome. And you're like, thank you. Like, I do this for fun. That's really special. And like, that's definitely a reason why I invited you over to be on here, because a lot of people are trying to figure that out, and a lot of people are trying to live that, man. Do you have like advice, I guess, for people? I shouldn't say people, I should say artists that want to take their stuff to the next level. They're kind of at the level where it's like people are seeing them. They're like, hey, man, your stuff's good. And they're dabbling with doing it, stuff like that. What would you tell them? And especially people who are full-time students, because that's a lot of things. Somebody's going to school for something they're not passionate about. You know, maybe they're an accountant, right? And they felt pressure to do it. They're like, no, I don't want to go to art school. My dad said it doesn't make any money. But they're doing this art on the side. What advice would you give someone like that?
I would say, I mean, the cliche sayings, you know, stick to what you're good at, or, you know, do what you're passionate about, you know, which is easier said than done. But I think that a huge part or a huge habit to have for any successful person is consistency. So for me, since 2015, I've never stopped. There hasn't been one day where I haven't done something art related, whether it's thinking about something, planning something, designing something, actually painting, emailing somebody about something art related, social media. I mean, there's so many things, and that has grown. But even from when I started, like just getting back into it, you know, getting into the habit of being more consistent, and even if it's like an hour a day, you know, whatever you got to do. But if you just put in that extra time every day, even if you have a full-time job, you know what I mean? I mean, look at me. Like, I went to doctorate school.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
Super demanding.
It's very demanding, yeah.
And I was still able to, and it wasn't easy.
No.
But I was still able to manage and run the art business, you know what I mean?
Yeah. And was that the cost of your sleep? I'm assuming that.
Sometimes, yeah. But, you know, I mean, I still, for the most part, would make sure I get 6-7 hours of sleep
right.
a night. You know, some nights not.
And go to the gym.
Yeah.
And maintain a social life.
It's not easy. It's not easy. But finding that balance is number one, a challenge, but also a good thing to have if you can get to that point and
right.
find a good balance. Which sometimes I had, sometimes I didn't have as much, yeah. but...
I mean, we're all people. A lot of times our schedule can get out of whack. But I think to surmise, you're saying that there can't ever be any 0 days, meaning a day that you don't contribute to your dream at all. There can't be that. And you have to manage your time in a way where you can do the things that you need to do every single day and kind of keep it at like a necessity basis. Like, I need to at least do something for this one thing once a day, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Now, I'm not saying you can't take a day off, but... You know, and I'm sure, I know I said earlier I haven't taken one day off, but I'm sure there's been days where I haven't really anything.
Christmas, but somebody's birthday.
Just consistency. Just you gotta, like, if you're gonna commit, and stay consistent, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, it's not just gonna happen.
Yeah.
It's not just gonna happen. You gotta keep working at it and grinding, you know? You gotta put in the work, you know?
Right.
Like, anything else in life. But, and you hear it a lot, but... the journey itself, like that grind itself, is almost the fun part, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It can be the fun part.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes, you know, you get tired or things become a pain in the butt, but
mm-hmm.
for the most part, like, you can't really enjoy the rewards if you can't enjoy the grind to get there.
For sure.
You know?
The rewards are the long-term things, and I also think it's better when you're an artist because you get gratification along the way. Like, I'm sure that a driving force in your career has been people look at your Instagram and they look at the paintings you've done. And they go like, wow, you have the ability to make people's eyes light up, especially sports fans, right? When they see their favorite athlete painted, they're like, whoa, this is so cool, you know? And that kind of gives you that motivation to keep going, I'm guessing.
Yeah.
Like, you're doing something that creates a positive change and also inspires people. Like, when I went to your show, people were fascinated, like really fascinating. When they went downstairs, and I love the boxing one that you did, man, like... You know, it's really, really cool. And so I'll transition to some of the technical questions now. So you draw photorealistic, or is that fair to say? Would you disagree with me there?
No, okay. That's how I define my style, my attention to detail.
Right.
Photorealistic.
And naturally, it sounds like even from a young age, you just had good observational skills. You're telling me these early illustrations were pretty on point. Mm-hmm. Not to get too much into the secret sauce, but did you use the grids to try and get that photoreal stuff, like drawing by grid, or is there a strategy?
Yeah,
I mean,
grids for sure, and I learned that in school too.
Yeah, that's the classic one.
And I've kind of just grown on that. Sometimes if it's like a bigger project or something I need to get done quickly, I'll use a projector or I'll use something that helps me line it better. I used to use like a ruler a lot, but I used to use like this tool that can make a circle.
Protractor.
I don't know why I couldn't think of the name.
No, you're good.
But yes, I used
that's
to use
that. That's not
what
you use every day.
I used to use that where I would take like the, I would get the measurements of a design on the screen in smaller dimensions. And then when I'm doing it big, measure it out. Like, all right, this is 2 centimeters on the screen. It should be 2 inches here and compare.
Okay.
Yeah, so it's kind of just always a work in progress.
Yeah, people underestimate that. Proportions are hard to get, right? You got to remember that, like, the forearm should be matching your biceps, just simple things like that. Mm-hmm. You know, people, to the untrained eye, a lot of people can look at it and be like, wow, that looks awesome. And then to an artist, you can really look at it and be like, well, the legs are a little short in comparison to the torso. You know, like, you have all these details you can pick, and there's a myriad of ways that people going about making accurate images. Have you ever used the wooden pose dolls? Are you fans of that? Probably not, right? No, that's all.
No. Yeah.
It doesn't really work with athletes.
No.
It's just
and sometimes I'll even go backwards, go in reverse, where I'll start it and then mm-hmm. I'll take the actual image and lay it over or try to line it up and see if it's accurate.
Okay.
And if I need to adjust something, I'll adjust it. If not, or if it's close, I'm like, all right, just keep going.
Yeah.
So.
And a lot of your paintings, and this is for a lot of sports paintings I see, it's an athlete in a dynamic pose contrasted against just kind of like a wall of black, which makes it pop so much. Mm. And you've done a really cool one. I saw it was Philadelphia Phillies. I don't know the name of the baseball player you did, but there was a Philly skyline like on the baseball bat. It was awesome. That was definitely one of the ones at your show. So when you're recreating these images, are you keeping the same light source or are you changing the light source? Meaning, like, is the lighting different or... Yeah, I think you know what I'm saying.
I try to keep the same light source.
Yeah.
Because usually, if you just keep it the way it is, mm-hmm. it makes things simpler.
Mm-hmm.
And then whatever I'm adding to that didn't have that light source to begin with, I kind of just try to match it.
Right.
Yeah, I usually just keep it the way it is.
Yeah, and I think that's definitely more effective when you're comparing something in person to somebody, because mm-hmm. they can look at something with the same light source and be like, wow, like you really captured it well.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas no matter how educated you are in photography and light sources, when you change it, it's just going to look drastically different. I mean, everybody knows that. It's a film technique. It's also way harder to do, and you create unnecessary work for yourself. Well, on the topic of faces, because again, back to the dynamics and powers, you draw a lot of intense faces. Do you ever get frustrated when you're making the proportion of a face? Because if you have just like one eye a little low or like a little high in comparison to how they look completely different, you know?
Yeah.
So how do you bypass that frustration that a lot of artists have?
I don't always bypass it. I deal with it.
I just want to say before you dive into this, the Robert De Niro one that you have on your Instagram is amazing. Like I was looking
at it.
This looks exactly.
Man, right. you really went far back, huh?
Yeah, man. Yeah, I researched you, man.
Yeah, I did that. I did that for a friend that I actually lived with for a time in college, mm-hmm. and he.
So you did that in college?
I did that maybe the second year that I was doing my art again.
Okay.
But yeah, he's just a Robert De Niro fan. He's like, hey, like. Be really cool to have you do this, you know.
That was I just want to say, like, that face was spot on, you know,
because
a lot of people, De Niro is the subject of a lot of art, and sometimes it's a hit or miss, but yours was spot on, man. It was
appreciate
really
that. Yeah, and I even have old ones I did of like Albert Einstein, Abraham Lincoln.
Yeah, I haven't seen those. I saw the elephant one. That's the oldest one.
Yeah,
I saw.
that's way back. For faces, like sometimes. It just first time doing it comes out perfect.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes I'll step back and I'll really have to look at it and then be like, oh wait, this eye is off. Or have somebody else look at it and be like, that eye is smaller than that one, you know, and I didn't even realize it, you know, and then I have to readjust. But usually, you know, it's pretty spot on.
Mm-hmm.
Probably the hardest part for me usually is doing the mouth. And certain proportions, like sometimes
it's awkward to draw teeth.
it can be very awkward. Like if they're the slightest bit too small or too wide, or you don't space them correctly, or if you make like the shadowing too dark, looks like they have dirty teeth. Like that's probably the most challenging part that I've run into.
Right,
is getting that proportion down.
Yeah, I'm really amazed by people that can. I wouldn't say caricature, that's probably a bad word, but they make like a cartoon exaggeration of the person while mm-hmm. making it still look like them, you know? Mm-hmm. Like that to me is always fascinating because they have just like the key elements of what that person is. I think a classic example would be, I'm not sure if you're a Disney buff, but in Aladdin, right? The genie's doing different impressions and he turns into Jack Nicholson for a second.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just like, obviously, it's a very cartoony version of his face, but they have the things that make him look like Jack Nicholson, you know? It's the eyebrows, it's the way the smile goes up. So, like, there's these telltale signs that if we see them minimized, we still know who it is, right?
Yeah.
We see it all the time, like on The Simpsons and Family Guy and stuff like that. Faces mm-hmm. are so sensitive. That's why I think the number one thing for anybody who draws, it's like, you draw? Yeah, I draw. Like, you want me to draw you something? Cool, draw me. That's the, right? Isn't that like how it goes every single time? And then you're like, ah, you don't understand. Like, it has to be exact for you to be impressed. Like, it has to be exactly like you, and it's tiresome. Yeah. But you have this attention to detail. You have a fascination with it, right?
Yeah, for sure. My attention to detail is like a big part of my work, so I try to always focus on that. And I always try to add little details that people might not notice right away.
Yeah.
Like unique things that might not even be there in real life, but I'll just add it because I think it makes it more unique.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, just those details, like, I think make it pop. And I think not putting in the extra details would make the work less dramatic.
Yeah.
So I like to focus on that a lot.
That's cool. Now, are all your commissions as of recently sports based, or do you get occasionally like other ones? Like, hey, can you draw me and my daughter? Do you get those anymore or no?
Oh, I get that stuff all the time.
Okay.
But I don't do it.
Are you serious?
Yeah, I for quite some time now I've been turning down various requests like that.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes in general, no matter what it is, people just don't understand maybe the cost for an original piece or the amount of time it takes to make that.
Is essentially what determines the money. What with supplies, of course.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, even on Instagram especially, it slowed down a little bit. But when I was first getting into it, I would get so many little kids just messaging me saying, hey, can you draw me? You know, and it's like, sorry, no.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, but...
And then people try and pull the four exposure thing on you. Like, bro, I can get you in front of this guy and that guy.
Yeah,
like, great.
Sometimes people try to talk a big game and, you know, try to get free work. But yeah, I've really tried to get away from just accepting anything and everything, which I used to do, just from the standpoint of, one, I always like a new challenge, and two, you know, trying to make money and trying to build a clientele. But I eventually cut off pretty much anything that's not sports related. And if it's like for a friend or something that is unique where I just know it means a lot to the person, then I'll do it. Like, even recently I did a dog portrait for somebody, and those are easy for me to do.
Yeah.
But his dog passed away, and I knew how much his dog meant to him. Right. And, you know, I've had people cry in front of me when giving them artwork.
That's,
you know,
amazing, man.
And that's like, that's special to me. You know what I mean? Even, even if it's a dog portrait, like, just the emotion attached to that and me being able to bring that kind of to life for them forever to hang on the wall. You know, I mean, I think it's pretty special to be able to, I don't want people to cry, but for them to react that way, you know, means a lot to me because I know it has that much of an impact on them.
And you did your job. I mean, art evokes emotion, or it's supposed to at least evoke a feeling. So that's really cool.
Yeah.
So you've cut off everything that is not your direct passion. And I don't blame you. I mean, it sucks doing work that you don't care about, and then it ends up looking like you didn't care about it. And it's like, where are we going with this? So, but after all this time, I'm guessing that drawing specifically football athletes is your favorite thing. Is that your favorite thing to work on, or is there something else?
Yeah. It's my favorite because I can relate to it the most. You know, when a football player that I'm working with, or even if it's something that I'm conceptualizing, like, I always try to put myself in their shoes. Like, what would I want? What I want it to look like, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Or if I'm doing a commission job for, like, an NFL guy, you know, I'm like, what would I want it to look like? What would I want it to be?
That's cool.
So from that perspective, I feel like that helps a lot.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah, that's pretty sick, man. Mm-hmm. I noticed that you transitioned. Well, I didn't even notice, actually. I was talking to you at the art show, and I was admiring one of the pieces on canvas, and you were like, yeah, I did that in Procreate. So my question is, when do you decide to do traditional, and when do you decide to go digital? Or is that at the request of your clientele? Or are you not even telling people, like, which is which, I guess, like, at the art shows? Because I didn't notice. I mean, like, how do you decide what medium you're going to use, I guess?
I don't really have a process for that.
No?
I guess it depends on what it is and what I think will work better, but I've been transitioning more and more to doing digital, and I've just been drawn to that.
Mm-hmm.
Just because I have such a heavy illustration and sketching background.
Yeah.
And the reason I really like got intrigued by it is because a friend of mine who is a very talented painter, his name's Chuck Styles, like he's super talented, and he switched completely from acrylic to digital, and not many people can even tell. Like he was able to maintain that same style,
yeah.
But it looks even cooler when he does it digital. Mm. And I was intrigued by that just because of the freedom of I can take my iPad anywhere yeah. and do that, you know what I mean? And I can variate, you know, the different brushes and the different textures, and it's just it's kind of opened up the creative process to what I can create, you know?
Right.
That's why it's called Procreate.
Yeah,
but that should be a goofy name. That should be an ad for them right there.
That actually should be, but, man. You'd be perfect for a commercial for that, man. They show you painting, like actually traditionally painting, and just like, sometimes I'm on the go and I'll have time to paint. Just like have this corny speech and then have you like an airplane or like a jet just like doing the same. It zooms out and it looked like you were painting it on paper, but oh, it's actually an iPad. They would do something silly like that.
Yeah, so, you know, I like to kind of combine things, you know what I mean? I don't like to just do one strict medium, because what I found is that sticking to one medium, I can't necessarily get the same look and feel that I could if I'm combining things. So I like to combine all of it now, you know? Digital, I'll do some of it digital, but then I'll get it on canvas, I'll print it on canvas, and then I'll start adding more to it.
Wait, you'll add more to it traditionally after you print it on canvas?
Yep.
What?
Yeah, that's pretty cool. So then I'll take, I like to use acrylic and spray paint for the most part.
Yeah, yeah. Spray paint for like the kind of like the mist effect. Am I getting that right?
For that, yeah. And also just if it's something where like there's something coming off the ground or kind of just like sweat coming off or just stuff flying out.
Yeah, particle
creating
effect.
that energy look, you know?
That's super cool.
Stuff like that. Or I'll even take paint, mix it with water, and just start going at it just randomly, and like, I don't know.
Nice.
Just get into a certain zone. But yeah, the point is that I like to combine them now, because I still can't get certain textures with the Procreate that I can with a real paint.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I think that's, you know, the way for a lot of traditional artists. It's just that feeling, man. Like your arm, your brain, whatever connectivity is involved in making that image manually is so used to that, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And there's only certain ways that you can get in there. I'm about to ask you two deep questions. So the first one is there any art that you've made that no one's seen?
Like years ago or like recently?
Just in your life. Like, but it's notable. It's not like some sketch you made, like, and it's like, no one's seen this, but like you worked really hard on something. I wouldn't say really hard. You made a tangible effort on something, and you're like, you know what? I'm not gonna show this to anybody. Has there ever been something like that? Deep question. I know for an artist, that's a deep question.
I wish I had like a cool answer. Like, yeah, I have a whole collection I haven't put out there yet.
You'll see when I'm dead.
yeah, it'll come out in 50 years. Like, now, like I have a couple things I'm sitting on right now that I've been waiting to release. I have something I completed end of November that I've been sitting on just because of timing, mm-hmm. like certain things that I have to wait on.
Mm-hmm.
But there's that, and then a couple other things that I've been sitting on. But one thing that I haven't really ever put out there, I think I posted it once or at least a part of it, but it was a self-portrait that I did. That I started and never quite finished. It was finished for the class I did it for, but it wasn't finished in my mind, not even close. But I took one art class ever in college at Temple University.
Okay.
I actually wanted to be an art minor in school, right. But they got rid of that when I went there.
Bummer, man.
And then my senior year, they brought it back.
Oh, dang.
I was like, come on. Like, you're going to bring it back when I'm about to be done?
That's pretty messed up, especially for you. Like, somebody who actually would have like use that to its fullest advantage.
Yeah.
Not
yeah.
just like that.
And I tried being a business minor at one point, and that was just a waste of my time. I was like, this is just
minors is a
anything.
Whole nother conversation. I'm not even sure like if anyone's really benefited off of that. Maybe I'm ignorant to the effect of minors, but I didn't see anybody who was like, dude, thank God for my minor in history. Like, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know.
But maybe if you do it right,
you have an unfinished self-portrait.
Unfinished self-portrait.
That'd be dope if you came back and like finished it like yeah, 20 years later, but like made it look like how you look now. That'd be sick.
That'd be pretty cool.
So the second deep question is, before 2015, I think you said was like that span that you start up doing your art. I'm guessing you stopped. Was it because there was no inspiration, or was there something else going on in your life?
Yeah, I think it was a combination of things. Not a lot of inspiration, not a lot of focus on it.
Mm.
Wasn't a big priority for me.
It must have sucked, huh?
What's that?
It must have like really sucked. Like the
And maybe I didn't like think it sucked at the time, okay, but maybe
you didn't know.
Unconsciously, I didn't know it was affecting me, just not releasing that creative side.
Yeah, man.
But I was so focused on like school and just going to college and life, transitioning and just trying to have fun as a freshman in college.
That's something when you're underclassmen, right? That's the thing about painting and art that people don't realize. It's like, it's hours of you sitting by yourself, like really, I mean like really alone.
Yeah.
And like you said, in the wee hours of the night. And, you know, when you're young and at the age in university, you want to be running around and doing stuff. And it's like, you know, people are going to see like, what are you doing all day? Like, oh, I'm sitting working on this piece. But when they see it, they treat it like you did it in 5 minutes, you know? They really underestimate all that's been poured into it.
Mm.
And I can totally understand why in the beginning of undergrad, you kind of pushed art to the side. I feel like most people do, you know? Because you're trying to establish yourself. You're trying to get your roots in at this new environment and really use it to its fullest advantage. So it wasn't anything like, no, I'll never come back to paintings. Those days are behind me. It wasn't anything like that.
Yeah, it wasn't anything like that. It was just that I didn't have time for it, or I didn't make the time for it.
Yeah.
I didn't make the time for it.
Gotcha.
But I also did not at all think it would be a source of income.
Really?
A career. Huh. None of that. Never really crossed my mind.
That's amazing.
And I for sure could have gone to art school, and I'm confident that I could have got into Tyler or any other school. I had like pretty good portfolio from high school.
At the skill level you were at high school, you were confident.
Yeah, and I had some work that was in shows.
Yeah, I think it's the gun sketch that you did. It was like a wood and metal piece that you sketched. It was just pencil.
Oh, maybe it was the wrench. It was like close-up shot of a wrench.
Yeah, I was like, whoa, man.
Yeah,
this is pretty good.
I had some pieces that were in like county shows. I got like first place and stuff like that.
Nice.
So like, I had a nice little portfolio of stuff, none of which was sports except for one. Actually, there's one piece that I did that I brought back into my collection and made it a print for a while.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so I never really thought of it that way.
So what was the ship that sailed the thousand ships? Like, what was the first one that got the ball rolling? Or did we talk about that already?
No, not really. We didn't talk about it at all. Because, you know, like I said, I had started college, was focusing on that. And probably the first event that happened was I missed football a lot, you know. And I had the opportunity to play football at smaller schools that recruited me, you know, like private schools or Division III schools. And I did a bunch of different visits while I was in high school, and I didn't get a good vibe from any of them. And I wanted to be in the city. I wanted to be at a big university.
Yeah.
So that's why I went to Temple. But I quickly was missing football a lot, you know. Mm. And I had seen some of the guys on the team and the size of them and just eyeing them up, stuff like that. And I was like, maybe I have a shot. You know, maybe I have a shot to play. So that's when I met Graham, my freshman year at Temple. And he was a very different person back then.
Telling me stories last time we hung out. It's amazing.
I'm sure
he talked about it on the podcast.
Yeah. I'm sure he would tell you.
Mm-hmm.
So I connected with him, and he had the same goals as I did, which was to walk on to the Temple football team.
Cool.
Because, you know, it was a known thing that you can go to a tryout, do a workout, and maybe they'll bring on the team onto a Division I football program.
Right.
So I trained so hard for half a year, six, seven months, through the trainer that Graham connected me to.
Nice.
And we trained together with other athletes as well. And I was in the best shape of my life, you know, like crazy shape that I never thought I'd get into, you know what I mean? Speed, strength, power, just ready to go. And, then came time to try out for the team, and I did the tryout, went really well. And I ended up making the team, which was like life changing for me. You know what I mean?
That's awesome.
there wasn't a lot of people that thought I could make a Division One program. Even like friends and stuff that like, it's not like I hated them or anything like that, but like I knew that they weren't giving me, you know, that chance. They didn't really,
kind of shrugged you off.
Like, yeah, yeah, go for it, Jordan. Yeah, go for
it. Yeah, you got it, man.
Yeah, stuff like that. Because even from my high school, there wasn't a lot of kids that made a Division One team unless they were like recruited.
Yeah.
So that was like a big moment for me, taking that step, putting in all that work and making a team like that.
It's an underdog story, man.
Just that in itself. And me and Graham had always joked, oh, we just want to make the team to get all the gear and stuff and look cool. Which still, even when it happened, I was kind of like, oh, cool, I get all this gear.
Yeah,
and,
nice.
But, that started a whole new life for me, living that life. And that was pretty amazing. I'm really grateful that I had that experience, because that definitely molded, one, my appreciation for college football, Division One football, and also just my character and seeing where hard work can take you and diligence and just putting in the work. So that was a special moment for me. And then as I progressed and played with the team, I then got hurt within like a year. And in high school, I had a decent amount of concussions. We had bad equipment, and the same season I had concussions, like half the team did, and it was just not good.
Yeah.
My senior year, I bought my own helmet, had no issues, and I almost like put that to the side as a part of the game. You know, I pretended that wasn't an issue, you know what I mean? And then when I got another one at Temple, another concussion, you know, it wasn't like severe, but it was, you know, it was a significant concussion. I was honest with the doctor about how many I had in high school, you know, and not a lot of players are honest about how many concussions they've had. You know, it happens so often.
Right.
So, you know, I told him how many, which was like four or five, like over time, over a couple years. And he said, you know, it wouldn't be a bad idea to step away, you know. If you want to save your brain health, you know, which at the time, him telling me that, I was like, wow, like he makes a valid point. So I spent a couple weeks just sitting on it, trying to recover as well to be able to practice again. And I ended up making the decision that I should quit. I should stop playing, just because, you know, getting another concussion, I could have a brain injury, a serious brain injury, you know what I mean? I could have brain damage, you know? So that was one of the hardest decisions of my life, making that decision, just because I had put in all that work, made it to that team, made it to that level, and then it was all taken away from me, you know?
Yeah.
So that was devastating.
But just so you know, before you know, get past that, it takes a lot of strength to make that decision, man. Like,
yeah,
it really does, because I feel like, you know, the athlete in you, the guy who made that walk-on work, wants to be like, I can do it anyway. You know, like, I can push past this. But it takes a lot of strength and knowing yourself to be like, this is not worth it, you know? And so, good for you for having the wherewithal. But, yeah, I definitely understand. I don't know how you felt, but I definitely understand there's probably a lot of pain in that moment.
Yeah, a lot of pain. So, you know, who knows what happened if I kept going, you know? There's actually a couple guys at that time who had concussions, and one other guy had to quit as well, for the same reasons. So yeah, that was really tough. And then, you know, for a little while I was kind of just in a funk, in a hazy mind space. And then, you know, I kind of started to get back in artwork. You know, I needed something to fill that void. I needed something to
do with your
clear
time.
My mind, you know. And I also had, this is interesting too, one of my roommates at the time, same kid that I did the Robert De Niro painting for, a friend of mine, his mother is an artist, and she was over at our house at one point, and she asked if I'd been drawing still, and because she knew of my work in high school, she knew of the work that I did, and she asked me that, and she said, you know, you should never waste your talents, you know, and like when she said that, it's just like it set off a light bulb in my head. I felt obligated. Mm. I was like, you know what, you're right. You know, and that kind of like gave me the extra kick to kind of get back into it a little bit. So it's kind of a combination of that and needing to fill that void, and just kind of getting out of that mental funk and saying, I can't just sit around anymore. I gotta do something. So I think naturally my passion for football is what influenced the type of artwork I started doing again.
Right. You applied that same work ethic.
Yeah.
That's for awesome. Sure.
Yeah. And that same energy and passion and all that. And, you know, I was just doing it for fun at first. And, I did one for one player or family member or friend. And then once somebody paid me for it, well, then I was like, wow, I can make, people will pay me to do this.
Yeah, man.
I can make money off of something I create, which is like, that feeling in itself is really amazing.
Your idea literally coming out of your head and being transposed in reality makes you money, which it's crazy.
Yeah.
It's so crazy.
So just that kind of motivated me even more.
Yeah.
And then I pulled the trigger and made an Instagram, and man, that feels like so long ago. That feels like another lifetime ago when I did that.
Yeah.
Cause
what was the first one? What was the first one? It wasn't the Ray Lewis.
No. That was early though. I'm trying to think. I did one of, you know what? The first one might have been one of Shady McCoy.
Okay.
Or you know what? No, I think it was Reggie Bush. I was a huge Reggie Bush fan when he played in college.
Yeah.
And it was one of him when he played on the Lions.
Oh, sick.
And I still have that one. I still have that in storage. I did that one. I did one of Shady McCoy, like, in the snow. I called it, like, Shady in the Snow or something like that. Like, a small little illustration. And the first one I did for a Temple guy was for Tyler Medikevich, who was, like, a big name at the time. He plays for the Steelers now. And he was just a good guy, too, you know. And he really liked the artwork. And that kind of led to me doing work for another guy and another guy. And it kind of just was a chain reaction from there.
I'm sorry to sidetrack you. You said the Instagram felt like it was so long ago at this point.
Yeah. Just not knowing how to run social media and how to utilize it. And it's come a long way.
Yeah.
It's come a very, very long way from that point in time. But I'm glad I pulled that trigger early and decided to start my own page of just putting my artwork out there.
Yeah.
You know.
And you've galvanized it pretty well. Like, I've checked out your account. It's pretty good, man. There's a lot of content for anybody who's just interested in sports, not even interested in art. Like, just to go through your page, it's impressive. It really is. So, I noticed that this isn't a caption, and you also mentioned it to me in this podcast verbally. Everything happens for a reason. I feel like that's a kind of a central mantra for you. I'm guessing that it's applicable to your situation with football, but like, what is the belief behind that? Where did that start?
That kind of started as I reflected, you know, and looking back to like the way I became an artist, like a full-time artist, and got back into it. Because although I had to quit football, which was devastating, that might have never led to me doing what I do now.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And who knows what direction I would have gone if I had kept playing.
Right.
I could be brain dead. You know, you know, who knows? But I feel and I know that that happened for a reason.
Yeah.
For me to do what I do now. You know, like, this was my destiny, you know, to be an artist, you know?
Yeah. That's a very nuanced way to look at it. A very mature perspective.
Yeah.
For sure.
And I try to, when things don't always go the way that I want them to or don't work out the way I want them to, I try to think that way.
Yeah.
You know, that this didn't happen for a reason. And maybe that'll reveal itself to me now or later on, but eventually I'll know why.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, and I've seen that happen many, many times where something doesn't work out right away, and sometimes we are so rushed for something to happen, for we want it to happen now, we need it right now, but you got to be patient.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You got to have patience. And I think that's another very important thing to have for any artist is to be patient.
You're a painter, man. You know patience probably more intimately than most people do.
Yeah, and even even me, like I still get impatient with a lot of stuff. And certain artists I know, like all of their work takes hundreds of hours, and I don't know how they do it. But yeah, I think patience can really separate somebody from being good to great.
Yeah. I was watching a training video of you and Graham on the beach, actually. It's pretty cool. Now that you told that story, that training video makes a lot more sense, because I was like, I know him and Graham are boys, but is that his client? Like, but no, you guys are both doing the football thing together. Yeah. But yeah, I saw you guys training on the beach, and it was a really funny video. Obviously, Graham, he has a lot of energy, great guy. But you reveal in the video that you have a tattoo that says, lose your dreams, lose your mind, which I think is really, really sick. And it is from your cousin. I feel like that must be motivation. Like, you literally wear it on your chest, mm-hmm. you know? And I feel like from what you've described tonight, you're just this guy that without you, I feel like you must look at people who live lives where they don't pursue their passion and just be like, what are you living for? You know, I feel like the way that you live your life is like you either do your passion or you do nothing. Am I getting that right? I feel like that's the kind of person that you are.
Yeah. And I mean, I think it all comes down to what makes you happy.
Right.
If having a job and that job, what you do for that job makes you happy, that's fine. If you make this much money in a year and that makes you happy, that's fine. I think people lose that idea a lot. You know, everybody's trying to make money, everybody's trying to have success, but like, are you happy? You know what I mean? And I lose that myself sometimes too. You know what I mean? Get too caught up in trying to get a new deal, trying to make sales, trying to, you know, meet somebody new. But I think you gotta take a step back and think, are you happy? You know, is what you're doing making you happy?
So you find that to be the most important attribute when pursuing something. Does this make me happy?
Yeah, I think it's very important. I think it is very important. I mean, if you're not happy doing it, like, are you doing it for somebody else? You know what I mean? Are you,
right.
You know what I mean? Why are you doing it?
Hmm.
You know, and there's plenty of times throughout that experience and time that things are frustrating or things like, you know, aren't what you want to be doing in that moment. But overall, what you're doing, like being an artist or whatever it is, like, is that making you happy? Is that fulfilling? You know what I mean?
Right.
Even for me tonight, going out of my way to some random house in Bensalem, PA, not only you, but to a client's house.
It's definitely me.
I mean, it worked out, like me having to go to his place and then come here and hang out with
on.
You.
Yeah.
Yeah, no. It's, I mean, this is fun for me to be able to reflect and stuff, but, and tell my story. But, doing something like that, just going to his house and personally giving him the artwork and, you know, like kind of picking his brain of why he got it and where he found me and just like, very personal, you know what I mean? Like, I'm in this random person's house. Like, he didn't even ask me any questions. He just had me walk on in.
Right.
Hanging out with his wife, his dogs, you know what I mean?
Yeah. It's more human than a normal business transaction.
Yeah, very more human. Yeah. And it's like 8 o'clock at night and right. like we're communicating through like email and then like texting and like it just goes that way a lot, you know?
That's awesome.
And it's cool, you know, it's that's part of the fun for me.
What does your family think of what you do? And when I say family, I mean like extended family, because I know your dad was an artist and your brother's a photographer, so they understand. But I mean, like, when you tell people, like, hey, look, I paint, like, what do your family members say at their Christmas gatherings and stuff like that?
I mean, I don't have a huge family
mm-hmm.
to begin with, you know, as far as extended family and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, I think they are all supportive, you know? They all... they all kind of hype me up sometimes cool. or are excited about what I've been doing or like if something new happened, they're like, oh, like I saw like, you know, this happened and you met this guy and how was that, you know? So they're definitely supportive and
awesome.
They don't judge or they don't, you know, they accept it for what it is.
That's
you know?
Cool.
Yeah.
Awesome.
So,
is there anything else you'd like to add? Because we're about to end. Is there any? Was there one last thing you'd like to say? No pressure. No pressure.
Oh man. I mean, follow me on social media at Spectre_art. Check out my website, SpectreSportsArt.com. You know, if you have any questions as an artist, if somebody hears this as an artist, feel free to reach out. I really enjoy, if you want to call it mentoring or just giving people advice, like that brings me a lot of joy too. If I can help somebody have success as well, based on my experience and based on the connections I have or the knowledge I have, I'm always open to doing that.
That's awesome. So, yeah. And thank you for coming on. I really appreciate it.
Yeah. Thanks. So, thank you for having me.
No, always, man. And you're more than welcome to come on again later down the line to talk about whatever project you want to, or just to pick your brain even more.
Mm-hmm.
I'll get some sports guys on here because really I'm an art guy, primarily, not a sports guy. So, yeah, young artists, hit them up. Sports fans, hit them up. Art fans, hit them up. Jordan, thank you so much, man, once again.
Thank you.
It's been episode 78. See you next time.
Sunday was a fun day I spent with you. Still